Extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer. Matt Doyle is here. The regular season is over. On to the Audi 2024 MLS Cup playoffs, Doyle. I love the regular season. I love the week-to-week march, but we're marching to one place, and it's the MLS Cup. And only
you've always been a playoff performer. We've always been a playoff performer.
You think so? I saved my best for last?
Dude, just one little 6 month or 6 week spurt, you're ready to go. Amp it up to 11 every single time. This is your time, man.
I don't know how to take this. Part of me thinks you're saying I slog through the vast majority of the season and just hoping nobody notices until the end. And that might be true. I don't know. You have to judge me on my merits. That's the way this works. That's the way the playoffs work. If you were not in the top 9 seeds in either conference, adios, goodbye, au revoir. We don't care about you until you start making transfer moves. If you are in the top 7, you are a playoff team. Congratulations to you if you're the 8th or 9th seed. You're at the party. Like, you got invited, but like, we were a little hesitant to do so. And in my mind, you're a postseason team.
Yes, there's a distinction there, right? It's a fine but distinct line between a postseason team and a playoff team. If you're in the 8-9 game, you made the postseason. You're in the wild card round. If you win the wild card game, you are then officially a playoff team. Gonna be a big Tuesday and Wednesday, Wiebe.
Massive, massive. Tuesday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time, CF Montreal hosting Atlanta United, who got in by the skin of their teeth. 30-minute pregame show, MLS countdown on MLS season pass. Then on Wednesday in the Western Conference, the wildcard game, Vancouver Whitecaps are the 8th seed. The Vancouver Whitecaps will go to Portland. 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. Again, 30-minute pregame show to lead you in.
Is that because of the metric system?
It's because there's some supercross or motocross going down in Vancouver, unfortunately, because of that. BC Place was not going to be able to host this match, so Vancouver Whitecaps have to look in the mirror. That's who to blame, Caps. You had 7 matches without a win in the regular season. You could be the 7th seed. You could be the 6th seed. You could be the 5th seed. You could probably even be the 4th seed. Instead, you are the 8th seed, and you do not have home field advantage in the wild card game. And then on Friday, the first round starts. Inter Miami has a night all to themselves, 8:30 p.m. on Friday. They will play either Montreal or Atlanta, depending on who wins that wild card game. Our pregame, Kalen Carr in Times Square. Messi Cam on MLS TikTok. Go sign up for that one. And of course, all this is on MLS season pass. And I just want to let people know, I didn't know it. I had no idea because I needed to help some fine folks out on Twitter this morning. I looked it up. It is $9.99, less than $10 for MLS season pass for the rest of the season. That means you can watch every single playoff game, including those played by one Lionel Messi, for less than $10. There's a lot of things I spend more than $10 on, Doyle, that I just don't even think about, and it's probably a personal flaw, and my budget would benefit if I actually thought harder about that. But if you love soccer and you listen to this show and you're not a season pass subscriber, $9.99, folks. Just
now's the time of year to do it. It's not just Messi. It's Andrew Wiebe twice a night for the next 6 weeks.
I was like, which star is he going to go with? Yeah.
Andrew Wiebe, countdown and wrap up basically every night.
And Kalen Carr. And Lloyd Sam, and all the faces you know and love, Kevin Egan, of course, Kalen Kyle, Sasha Kleshchen, Bradley Wright Phillips, and many, many more. Bracket.mlssoccer.com for the bracket challenge. Go sign up for that as well while you're at it. Cash prizes, EAFC 25, plus bragging rights. You have until Miami kicks off on Friday evening to get your bracket locked in. We'll give you our picks later on in the show. All right, let's get to the soccer. Here's what was decided on decision day. In the East, Inter Miami set a single season points record with 74 points. They just pipped that 2021 New England Revolution team by 1 point. They qualify, FIFA announces after the final whistle, Gianni Infantino there on the field, for the Club World Cup and will host the first match at Hard Rock in Miami. Who do you think they might play, Doyle? Just guess. We have no idea, but just guessing.
Yeah. I think it's going to be Montreal, but I'm not willing.
I was talking about the Club World Cup, dog.
Oh, I thought we were jumping through.
No, I'm gonna throw out Real Madrid. Real Madrid. Can we see that? Is Barcelona qualified? I don't know.
Barcelona are not qualified. I don't even know what the field is right now.
I don't either. We'll figure that out. But never mind me there. And so the Seattle Sounders. Hey, Montreal, speaking of, they held on to the 8 seed with a home win against New York City FC. Atlanta got the final playoff spot as Philly lost to Cincinnati and DC lost at home to Charlotte 3-0. DC just needed a tie to make the playoffs. They could not get it done. More on that later. Christian Benteke did not score, but he won the Golden Boot. Congratulations to Christian. That is well deserved. And Orlando, despite losing to Atlanta at home, hold on to the number 4 seed because New York City lost. And Charlotte flip spots with New York City. They jump up to the 4 spot. We'll face Orlando, while New York City drops to 6 and will face Cincinnati in the first round. In the West, LAFC took the number 1 seed in all caps dramatic fashion over the Galaxy, while the Quakes celebrated the spoon in downtown LA. RSL jumped to the 3 seed. The Sounders dropped. They also fumbled Cascadia Cup at home against the Timbers. That is sort of like rinse and repeat since 2017. Minnesota jumped to the 6 seed. The Rapids dropped to the 7 seed. Injuries really disrupting their season. They lost in Austin, and they lost Georgi Mihailovic. Vancouver are the 8 seed, as we said, so they'll go to Portland in that wild card match. And as it pertains to MLS Cup hosting rights, the Shield matters, the standings, that is. Miami are number 1 in priority rights. Number 2 are Columbus. They beat the Red Bulls on a late goal. Number 3 are LAFC, and number 4 are the LA Galaxy. And if none of them make the MLS Cup, then we'll figure it out from there. In CONCACAF Champions Cup stakes, Cincinnati RSL, congratulations. You are in. One spot remains. That goes to the MLS Cup champion. If the teams that have already qualified via other means win MLS Cup, I mean, you're talking about the favorites there, Columbus, LAFC, Inter Miami, I guess you could say LA Galaxy, but you know, those three favorites and then the other people that are qualified, then the Sounders would get in for that final spot based on the Shield standings. All right. I don't know. We're really giving people information overload, Doyle.
Yeah.
What do you want to do this part? You want to refresh them on the format of the Audi 2024 MLS Cup playoffs, just in case, unlike Lionel Messi, they've forgotten.
Yeah. The postseason starts with the wildcard games on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then it goes into the round one best of three series. Remember, this is a format change that they made ahead of last season. The higher seed hosts two of the three games. Well, assuming three games are necessary, the higher seed hosts games 1 and 3. The lower seed hosts game 2, and then it goes back to single elimination in the conference semifinals, conference finals, and then finally MLS Cup on December 7th at the home of the higher seed, which will be most likely either Miami, Columbus, or LAFC.
All right. Your matchups in the first round. In the West, Galaxy Colorado. That's the 2-7, 3-6, as I said, RSL Minnesota, 4-5. Seattle, Houston Dynamo, LAFC awaiting their opponent from the wild card game. In the East, Crew Red Bulls. They may play 4 straight games. Wilfred Nancy doesn't like it, but we might. Cincinnati and New York City, Orlando taking on Charlotte, and then Miami awaiting Montreal or Atlanta. Just to keep you abreast, so you're as informed as you can possibly be, the Doyle Tears column is officially out on MLSsoccer.com. Mm-hmm. Go check that one out. We'll have a full round one preview, you know, the real playoffs, on Thursday on this show. We'll wrap up the wild card games, do all that stuff. Plus, we're going to pay off the Golden Boot draft. Who are we going to do that with? Probably the Golden Boot draft loser. David Goss will be here on Thursday. SoccerWise's own. I've really been enjoying SoccerWise with Tom Bogert out of the country. It's just been a little bit more measured, Doyle. The analysis has been more cogent, as you might say. And there's been less yelling without Tom around. Plus some great interviews from Dave. I mean, like the Will Koontz interview, I absolutely loved. Joe Lowry from Backheeled, et cetera, et cetera. So it's been good, but Dave will be here. He's back, baby. We got him. Our hooks are in him.
It's going to be really good to have David back, especially on the heels of the New York Liberty winning the WNBA title. This is the first time in David's life that a team he honestly, like, really, really roots for, other than the women's national team, has won a title. And it happened during the same week in which the Mets get eliminated in the NLCS. So it's going to be
on the same night, like, even.
Same night. I feel like Dave's going to be all over the shop, especially because this is going to be coming off Tuesday night's NBA opener, in which the Celtics are going to beat the Knicks by like 50.
Well, that's, you know, that's a Mets, Jets, existence. I'll throw the Knicks in there for good measure as well. All right, best thing you saw at Decision Day. Get us started, Doyle.
The Joseph and Caden show. There's no reason for this to be happening in Montreal. Like, I've been watching these games pretty closely. They're not using the ball more collectively as a team. They're not tilting the field. They're not creating appreciably better chances over this 7-game run. Montreal went 5-1-1 to close the season. Like, they're not doing all the things that it feels like they're doing. They just have in Joseph Martinez and Caden Clark, two guys who are an absolute heater and who have unquestionable chemistry, the two of them in that three-headed attack. As we get out in Bryce Duke as well, he has played at a level that I did not think that Bryce Duke was going to be able to reach. And they took apart in moments in NYCFC team that had been playing pretty well over the past 3 weeks. I just didn't expect it. I thought that Montreal were going to lose, and I thought they were going to miss the playoffs. But these two guys, they're so good together. It, like, none of the other stuff mattered. They're just like, we're going to go out and we're going to win this game. And they did.
It was charity in mid-September. I remember we did a segment on Countdown, and our producer was like, hey, I need you to handicap the Eastern Conference playoff race. Who are you going to include? And my first draft of, like, the graphics and what I wanted to do did not include CF Montreal. I mean, they had 27 points. They were down at the bottom. I was like, it would be charity to include Montreal. That's what I told Chris, our producer. I was like, we should not do it. He's like, okay, look, you have to do it. There is a chance. Don't take them out of the running. I put them in. I said in the segment, it's a Charmin soft schedule. The only way this happens for them is if everybody falls on their face and then Montreal basically take complete advantage and win every single home game they have and do something that they have not shown in the previous 24 games before now, which they had four wins in, that they were capable of. And lo and behold, the Caden and Joseph show, although Joseph and Caden probably, I mean, like, let's give, you know, first
billing.
Yeah,
Joseph still gets top billing.
Yeah, first billing. But to speak of that chemistry, in what world prior to maybe that moment or this run before, does Joseph Martinez dummy that ball to Caden Clark at the back post on the first goal?
So good.
Like, it works because nobody thinks Joseph will do it.
Yeah.
And it's just perfect. And you know, in that moment, Bryce Duke is winning the ball back, making a run in behind, playing the right pass. And then Caden Clark, who was a nothing burger to the extreme in Minnesota, like, it didn't work in any way. He said it. We all saw it. Goes and fights to win a ball, runs it down the entire sideline, beats his man, finds Joseph, who has that vintage Joseph, barely touched it to my toe, but it rolls inside the back post perfectly. I spin around, stand up, and put my hands in the air like a freaking Messiah celebration. Joseph is, he's in that striker mental zone where just nothing can stop him. And that has to be semi-scary for not just Atlanta, but yes, Atlanta, but two former teams. He could have his two former teams back-to-back in the playoffs. That is so delicious. It's perfect.
I love to see it. Joseph is just, he's a special player in MLS history. If you think about sort of the overall arc of this league over the course of three decades, one lens to view it through is before Joseph and that great Atlanta run from 2017 to 2019 and after Joseph. Like, he changed what we felt strikers were capable of in this league. And then he's just never been the same since that devastating ACL injury in early 2020. And we're getting a taste of the old Joseph again, just as we head into the playoffs against, as you said, one or potentially two former teams. And I love it as a fan of the league. I absolutely adore it. And another point I want to make, you were saying you had to throw Montreal into a charity preview of what could happen in the play. I had to do the same thing last week with Atlanta on This Is MLS. Like, we were doing a segment on, like, who's going to make it 8-9 in the Eastern Conference. And I think almost everybody picked Montreal and DC to stay in, or Philadelphia to sneak in. And then they threw it to me at the end. I was like, all right, I'll follow on the sword. I'll make the case for Atlanta. I'm like, Atlanta have a 1% chance of getting in because Atlanta have to go on the road and beat an Orlando City team that over the second half of the season was playing at a 74-point pace, the same pace that Miami have played at in setting the support of the single season points record. They have to go on the road and do that. And then they have to hope that DC United or Montreal lose. And they have to hope that Philadelphia don't win as well. And it all came together and it all happened. And now Atlanta's, their admin is dunking on me on Instagram. So I feel your pain, Weeby, is what I'm saying.
Hey, that's the content game, baby. You got to throw some takes out there, and every once in a while you'll get to have a victory lap, and that's all well and good, and if, you know, fuzzy and warm, and just as often in this league, perhaps more often, you get dunked on, and you've got to watch somebody dangling above you, and that's where you're at right now. Hey, Sabatime, though, is fun. Did you see the post-game interview? He was like, this is crazy, man. Like, it was it's so... This league, I just think about where we were in preseason, and we'll get to more dunking from Charlotte on us in that case, but where we were in preseason on Atlanta and what this season could be and who the protagonists were. And you're talking about Yakumakis and Almada, of course, and then both those guys get sold and Pineda is gone, and it just feels like it's all slipping away for Atlanta and they have no chance. And who's the hero? Saba Lobodjianidze. Who has killed Miami this year? Saba Lobodjianidze. So if Atlanta can get through to face Miami, and now you have Tata's former team, the storylines are lining up, is what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a really fun week.
Miami in two against either of these teams.
Okay, we'll get to that later on in the show. Best thing I saw, the entire end of the race for the West top seed was just completely absurd. I think it was 278 days from January 15th until decision day. 278 days from the start of preseason, the report date, until this date that set the playoff field. Imagine all the things, all the practices, all the games, the 99 points at stake for every single team, the injuries, the little issues within locker rooms, all the steps it took to get to this point for the Galaxy and LAFC. And for LAFC to just have that little window that they could jam open if they could win, if they could win and the Galaxy lost in Houston and there were multiple goal differential exchange that went LAFC's way, and then they would pip the Galaxy, who had seemed to just be a complete safe bet for the number one seed for, I don't know, like 3 or 4 weeks now. But then LAFC went on a 4-game winning streak and the Galaxy were within touching distance, and you just thought the Galaxy can't possibly screw this up on decision day, right? Even though they have a history of screwing it up on decision day, including against the Houston Dynamo. And then the Galaxy are losing 1-0. And LAFC are winning 2-1 late in these matches. I mean, time ticking away. And even then, the tiebreaker would go to goals scored and the Galaxy would be number one. And then in the 91st minute, Marlin for LAFC rises up, heads the ball home. The 32-52 are going crazy. They've got season pass fired up on their iPhones. And they're like, we're the top seed. We did it. The Galaxy, meanwhile, are desperately throwing numbers forward. They're the 2 seed now. And then Artur sticks his leg out and Ricky Puig goes down and there's a little bit of contact, but it's not that much contact, but it is contact. And the VAR in Houston spots it. And the referee goes to the monitor. He says, that's a penalty. And all of a sudden the Galaxy have this opportunity that, you know, we're all sitting on the edge of our seat thinking, is this it? Is this how the West is going to be decided? And Gabriel Peck finishes it, and the Galaxy are first again. And those images of LAFC fans at the bank, shout out the Cheeto bag guy, their heads go down, and they're like, ah, crap, it just didn't, you know, all these dominoes fell, and we're on the wrong side. And then the Galaxy, Doyle, fumbled the bag. They fumbled the bag, and not only did they fumble it, they fumbled it to Daniel Sterrez, a former Galaxy center back who was let go after the 2021 season. He had 8 years with the club. He's an LA kid. He was born in Burbank, raised in Calabasas. He started on the 2018 Zlatan team that lost to Houston on the final day in 2018 and missed the playoffs, and then he scores a freaking golazo like any striker in the world put it in their highlight reel header to break the Galaxy's heart in like the 100-something minute and knock them down to the 2 seed. Meanwhile, in downtown LA, again, they're watching on their iPhones, they're celebrating, and the Galaxy got to take an emotional and logistical gut punch, get on a plane, and go back to LA as the 2 seed. This decision day, when I looked at it to start in the East and in the West, I thought, you know what? There are some dominoes that can fall that can make this truly dramatic and awesome, but it is going to be low odds that those dominoes fall. we might have a boring decision day. And in both the East and the West, basically every domino that could fall to make it crazy fell. Basically every single one.
You were surprised that the Galaxy fumbled the bag like that?
No, I wasn't, but it was right there, so dude. The, it was 1-1. They just had to finish 5 minutes.
Yeah, so that's who the Galaxy are, man. That's like we've seen that repeatedly. And here's the thing. If they had taken care of business earlier in the year, give up one fewer dumb goal. Like think about the dumb goal they gave up to Vancouver at the end of that game a couple weeks ago. Think about the 4-2 that they took against Portland last month. Just like these simple.
They went to St. Louis and kind of got worked.
But like even in wins, they give up bad goals at the end of games. And if they had just one fewer time done that this year, then that Hysteris goal wouldn't have mattered. The Galaxy would still be in first place because it would have gone to the third tiebreaker, which is goals scored. So they would have been even with LAFC on wins, even on points, even on goal differential. They would have, a fourth tiebreaker would have gone to goal scored. And the Galaxy would still be in first place. So it's the little things over the course of the year in which the Galaxy have just proved themselves to not be part of that elite tier in MLS. You have to be able to lock down and get results. You have to be able to keep a zero, which they have not done since June. So when that, I mean, it was a super dramatic header. It was the last touch of the regular season, basically. It was like Batistuta would have been proud of this header. And
the run, Doyle.
It was brilliant. It was brilliant. Like it's Daniel Sterris's career highlight. I was 0%
surprised.
Here's
a quote, by the way.
I was 0% surprised.
Fair enough.
That the Galaxy ended the night in second place.
Fair enough. Daniel Sterris, remember, a guy who spent 8 years in the LA Galaxy organization, who grew up in Los Angeles, quote, it felt really good. A lot of reasons behind that. You can guess what some of those reasons might be and who he felt like he was paying back. Marlon, here's another great quote. I think I live my life with these emotions, the emotions that he felt, and it makes it a bit more tasty. I enjoyed that. Greg Vanney afterwards, quote, it's one play at the end of the season when there's a season of a ton of plays, but the one play being the last play of the season just really hurts for everybody. I told the group that we need to let this be a lesson. This one today hurt us, and it cost us first place. The next one like that will cost us our season. Those are the stakes, baby. Audi 2024 MLS Cup playoffs. Don't be falling short at the final whistle. Don't be the team with your head down. You're going to be gone. You'll be going home. You'll be playing golf, going to Cabo, wherever you do in the offseason. Some teams are already there, Doyle. Give me your biggest disappointment on decision day.
Oh, Philly. The way it happened with that epic own goal from Jakob Glesnes, which was the way the season started. Remember
the whole first half of their year.
Yeah, individual like errors. But do you remember the CONCACAF Champions Cup own goal that Glesnes scored from midfield?
Yes.
Yeah. And like, to begin the season with that and then to end the season the way it did, I thought until the very end that the Union were going to make the playoffs. Because if they had won against a Cincinnati team that has struggled for months, they would have gotten in ahead of Atlanta because of their superior tiebreaker. I think it would have gone down to
goal differential
yep. for them. Yep. And if you look at all the, like, their goal differential for the season, even after this loss, was +7. And their underlying numbers were all pretty good. And, like, they looked more like a 50-point team than a 37 or a 40-point team. But the individual errors from guys who had previously been rocks. Like it was Jose Martinez before he was sold. It was Glesnes and Jack Elliott in central defense. It, you know, bad moments.
Andre Blake had his early bad moments.
Bad moments from Andre Blake. Like these are the guys who were the foundation of this run over the past half decade that saw the Union win one title and come close to so many more. And they just fell apart in the biggest moments in shocking ways. And I still can't quite wrap my head around it. And look, we've already seen a lot of changes this summer. You're kidding yourself if you think there's not going to be more big changes coming this winter.
I mean, you mentioned those early season issues, and I agree. Look, it's a full season. There's a lot of points dropped in that time as well. The Union just also had an opportunity at the end of the year to get the job done, and it looked like they were going to because their best players were playing like their best players again. I'm talking about Uwa and Baribo and Daniel Gazdag. They had 10 goals, 4 assists in the 4 games leading up to the final 4 games of the season. That's incredible. That's what put the Union in position to perhaps get over the line. Then the final 4 games of the season, 1 assist.
Yeah. Yep. It was that home game against Atlanta at the end of September where they figured out how to blow a 1-0 lead where it was like, uh-oh. Because you could then look at the remaining schedule. They had 3 games left after that at Orlando, at Columbus, home to Cincinnati. Once they blew that one, I guess the writing was on the wall, and I refuse to see it. But the writing's on the wall for this roster. It's going to be a different roster next year. Maybe some of the young guys will get sold. I think some of the veterans.
You see Kai Wagner, all his quotes after this one.
Yeah, and look, man, he kind of pointed the finger at the homegrown kids a little bit, which I thought was weird. I thought was weird given that this was a failure of the veteran core of the Union. And I still can't quite wrap my head around it.
All right. Biggest disappointment for me. We'll stay in the East. DC United, man. DC United at home on decision day against Charlotte. They need a point or 3 points or just, you know, Atlanta and Philly to lose games that conceivably they should probably lose or just draw them. And none of those things happen. DC Doyle haven't won a home game. It's Nashville. I think it's Nashville back in July for DC. Been 3 months.
That's grim.
Since they won a home game. They have 2 shutouts in the entire season. The last one was March 30th. They lose 3-0 to Charlotte. And like they were in it for a long time. And Christian Benteke had multiple moments and balls in the back of the net. You thought we're going to make the difference. He was just a step offside. The timing wasn't right. And that aggressive nature that this team has had to have because they simply have not been able to defend in any way all season long. Came back and bit them. Like they gave Charlotte big time space to run into. Charlotte, to their credit, said, cool, when you played us in Charlotte, we had 2 really good blocks of 4 and you couldn't break us down and we'll do that again and now we have better players and we'll hit you on the counter. And they did to the tune of 3-0. And this DC team has not lived up just this year, but for 5 years to the legacy, to the history of the club.
They prefer the word tradition.
Okay, sorry. The tradition of the club to the passion of the supporters. The 2 teams that haven't made the playoffs since 2019 are DC United and the Chicago Fire. They didn't win at home for 3 months to end the season, and they missed the playoffs by tiebreaker. Like, as Troy Lesane said afterwards, and he told me this before the game as well, like, these fans deserve much more than this. And DC as an organization, as a club, I know it was year one of Lesane and Ali McKay in the front office, like, they have got to find a way to give this fan base more.
Well, let me give you the good news in that DC have as much as $8 million worth of salary coming off the books.
Oh boy, that's nice.
Yeah, I did the postmortem. It's up on MLSsoccer.com. It's a lot of guys who are in their 30s on big numbers, options that are team options, a couple of guys who are just coming off the books, their contracts are ending. They have the ability to remake virtually this entire team. If they add a buyout in as well, it could just be a completely different team. So I think this exercise this year was just about playing out the string with guys who were brought in by the previous regime. And now it all comes down to new CSO, Ali Mackay, who, you know, spent a little bit of money in the summer window. I think they spent about $4 million on Eno and Schnegg, the left back. Those guys didn't get on the field much, but you expect them to be a big part of next year. The disappointment is palpable. The upshot is it's going to be a completely different roster in 2025. Benteke will still be there. I think Jared Stroud, Ted Cudi-Pietro, but not a lot beyond that. And that's probably fair for a team that, as you pointed out, has not made the playoffs since 2019.
I do want to give some credit to DC United. They had some very young players play big roles this year. I mean,
none of them really Peltola, popped.
None of Peltola's 22. You're gonna say that about your boy Teddy KDP? Think it was good enough?
Not after last year. He was better last year than he was this year. Gabriel Pirani had a couple of moments
at the end,
yeah, but didn't feel sustainable. I love Madi Akinboni, but he did look a little 18-year-old center back. He looked a little out of
like an 18-year-old center back.
Depth. Jackson Hopkins had some nice moments, but I still don't know what his position. Like, there was no Kevin Paredes like or Andy Nahar like ascent from any of the young guys. But I mean, all right, it's going to be just about brand new next year, and I'm looking forward to it.
Hurts to have a golden boot season for Benteke not result in a postseason berth for DC United. Benteke did re-sign midseason, and all reports are he's very invested. You could see how disappointed he was, and I have to give Benteke a ton of credit this year. Like, there's a lot of elite players out there who would not as gracefully be a custodian of a process of improvement as Christian Benteke was, both internally and externally within this club.
Can I give you some Benteke stats?
Yeah, I would love them.
Aerials contested. Benteke, 435. Second place in the league. Take a guess.
220. 220.
188.
Oh, my God.
Aerials won. Benteke, 312. Second place in the league. Take a guess.
So 188 was attempted, right? That was second place?
Mm-hmm.
115.
109. Now, here's the real one. Second place in aerials won among center forwards. Remember, Benteke won 312 aerials in 2024.
72.
You nailed it. 72.
Did I?
You 100% nailed it. This dude won more than four times as many aerials as any other center forward in the league. Golden boot, just an all-time carry job. Honestly, if somebody had voted for Benteke for MVP, I wouldn't even be mad. I'd be like, you know what? You can make an argument that he provided more value to his team than anybody else in the league. I'm disappointed for him that didn't get to bring that into the wild card game.
Can I say that if those stats are repeated in 2025, that would to me seem like a bad thing? It would seem to me like DC have not developed another club, that they're still just swinging the same one. Like, you would hope that in the offseason and with, you know, the evolution of this game model, which they've had a lot of growing pains with to put in place for year one, but had some okay moments, that they would evolve just a little bit and not ask him to be so singular all the time. But hey man, if you're elite at something, I guess got to find a way to take advantage of it. It was tough to watch for DC because they did have a moment where they were into the playoffs again, not through their own efforts. Duncan McGuire had a goal late on against Atlanta that was then nullified by video review because of a handball. It was a correct call. But for a second, when it was 2-2 Orlando Atlanta, DC were in, and then whoop, right back out. And again, it's kind of become a trend in MLS recently, but teams watching on iPads on the field. And I got to say, I really enjoy seeing those moments of like emotional dichotomy. I'm sure it's awful for the players and the coaches in the moment, but I mean, that's what makes decision day special to me. Let's jump ahead and kind of create a lasting memory though. What made it the most special to you? What's the thing that you will remember from 2024 MLS decision day for the rest of your life?
Miami setting the record. They went down 2-0 and just dropped the hammer. And I think I put in the group chat, as soon as New England made it 2-0, I put in the group chat, Miami's winning this game 4-2. And I undershot it. I was wrong. They picked up, I think, 30 points from losing positions this year. Just look, they are a flawed team, but they have the greatest player of all time and three of his buddies and a lot of talent beyond that. And they entertain you in these utterly ridiculous and not ways that are not replicable by any other team in MLS history. And they are very obviously worthy supporter shield winners. And I can't wait to watch Messi in the playoffs.
Messi didn't even start this game. Messi came back from international duty where he went Super Saiyan against Bolivia.
Nobody on Miami started this game. Miami didn't come out of the locker room until the 35th minute.
Fair enough. Yeah. And then, you know, there was another handball, same situation of a handball that leads to a goal on Bobby Wood. It was going to be potentially 3-2 New England. And then it was just, it was like pickup.
Yeah.
Doyle, that's what Sasha and Bradley and I kept saying. Like, as you watch Suarez like running back heel into Messi's feed and Messi score from distance on a shot that, I mean, a run before the shot that nobody else can do, or Suarez, I don't know, what is that, like semi-bike cross it to Messi or whatever it is. Like the level that these guys can reach in terms of technical execution, tactical vision, and then just imagination and chemistry is on a completely different level.
Commitment. Commitment to the basic fundamental things. So many of these goals are because after they pass the ball, they keep moving. They don't take time to reorient themselves because they have already read the play and know where the space is. So they just like look at the Messi goal on the with the Suarez bike assist. Like Messi releases the pass and he just takes off for the 6-yard box. While Matt Polster and I forget who else it was in central midfield take a minute to reorient themselves. And in that moment, Messi's 3 yards ahead of them. And that's it. And Messi scored 600 goals like that, man. The stuff that they do together, you cannot replicate. You can replicate that. You could understand that your primary job as an attacking player, once you release the ball, is to keep moving and find space. Every single goal Miami scores is like that. It's not hard to decode. You just have to be like, you just cannot switch off.
I think of the first goal that they create as well, Messi's first touch, like, I don't know, mere seconds after he comes on. And it's one that you can just copy and paste into Barcelona colors. You know, it's yep. Him receiving the ball as he comes inside, Jordi Alba making a perfectly timed run, that little left-footed flip pass into the hole. It checks up perfectly. And this is, you know, this is where these other players are so well-trained in this moment to what you're talking about. Like, it's a freaking stampede into the 6-yard box, and Benja Kromoski wins it to score. But everybody on that Miami team understands as that pattern of play begins to develop, it's like, get to a goal-scoring position because that ball is coming. This is what is going to happen. And unfortunately for the Revs, they were not as in tune.
By the way,
I just want
Revs under the radar made a push to have the worst defense of all time. Going into this weekend, the record was 75 goals. San Jose were on 74. Obviously, they eclipsed that. The Revs ended up 74 goals conceded this year. So that game had gone 10 more minutes. Revs might have caught the Quakes for the worst defense in MLS history.
And of course, it was sort of poetic that the previous team to hold the points record, the 2021 Revs, had their future iteration give up the points record to get to 74. Now, also interesting that there was an undersung designated player for Inter Miami in all of this that got the job done, that allowed Miami to set the points record. Doyle, do you know who that underrated, undersung, probably forgotten, rightly so, DP was?
This is going to be a bit, so continue with the bit.
Matt Tweedy delivered in 2021 this points record in 2024 to Inter Miami. I don't know if you remember this. Decision day 2021. The Revs are facing Inter Miami. They lose 1-0. Blaz Matuidi has the only goal of that game. Had the Revs either tied or got 3 points, they would remain the points record holder for all time in Major League Soccer. Matt Tweedy got it done. He got the goal. So now, 3 years later, Blaz Matuidi sets up Lionel Messi and friends to be the greatest regular season team of all time.
This is football heritage.
Ah, exactly. Couldn't have said it better, Jose. Did Messi change your mind on MVP? This has been an ongoing debate on this show, in our group chat, on countdown ahead of the match. I'm sure in the minds of every voter, maybe not, because many probably just said it's Messi. Did you switch up at all?
No, I just will never vote an MVP as someone who played fewer than 2,000 minutes. There's only so much value you can add when you're playing a limited amount of games. You know, and in the 19 games Messi played, in the 15 starts, he added more value on a per minute basis than anyone else in the league. But in terms of
in MLS history,
for sure, 100%. But in terms of total value added in 2024, I just don't think that he was the right choice. There's no question he's the best player. There's no question. There never has been. That's not the award. The award is most valuable player. I voted for Cucho. I feel good about it.
I have not yet put my votes in, but the plan is still to vote for Cucho, and I am perfectly okay if that doesn't matter in the end. Yeah. I am happy to see Lionel Messi be the most valuable player of Major League Soccer for 2024.
I'll be shocked if he doesn't
win.
I will not quibble with it.
So we'll see what happens on that front. Good news for Miami is he's just flaming people right when it matters most and seems very motivated and healthy. I threw this out on the post-game show, and it kind of went under the radar, and honestly, I forgot I said it until I went back and watched a clip from it this morning. I said, Doyle, that if Messi and Miami win MLS Cup, they're the greatest MLS team of all time, no doubt. Am I stretching on that one? Is that accepted math to you, or would you go to the chalkboard on it?
It would be really hard to argue against it, but I led my tears piece with why I think it's actually Columbus who are the greatest MLS team I've ever seen. And if you look at it, the Crew have played 25 games in tournament play over the past 2 years, includes Campeones Cup, Leagues Cup, Playoffs, Open Cup. In those 25 games, they are 16-3-6, which is the same points per game pace that Miami have registered this year in their record-setting season. The Crew are also plus 24 goal differential, which is a better pace per game than Miami have registered in this regular season. Their underlying numbers are even better. They're plus 0.67 expected goal differential per 90 over this 25 game straight, which would, if you just put that in a regular season, that would be, I think, the sixth best regular season in American Soccer Analysis database. The difference is, because we're talking about tournament play, the Crew have been doing this against, on average, a higher quality group of teams than a regular MLS season is played against. Like, they have two games against Monterrey, two games against Club America, two games against Tigres in there. They have two games against Inter Miami, or a game against Inter Miami, and a game, or two games, no, just one game against FC Cincinnati in last year's playoffs. They have two games against LAFC. Like, this schedule has been brutal, and the Crew have won at a level that suggests to me that they are the best MLS team in history. And what we're going to see, hopefully, in this postseason is a fully healthy Inter Miami against a fully healthy Crew in the Eastern Conference Finals. Sorry, everybody else, but I don't want to see any other matchup going hammer and tongs for the right to go into MLS Cup and then prove it. Because whichever one of these teams wins MLS Cup, that's the team we're going to be remembering about 2024. 2024 is going to be about the Crew or Inter Miami or quite possibly LAFC if they win MLS Cup, because those teams are all playing for a spot in history and they're playing for a double. For the Crew, it's Leagues Cup, MLS Cup. For Miami, it's Shield Cup. For LAFC, it's Open Cup, MLS Cup.
I'm with you on that. I think the one thing I would say to you on the Crew argument is, I assume you're including last year's playoffs in that math, right?
Yes. Yep.
And I guess when I'm making the argument of best MLS team of all time, I'm thinking in terms of singular season. I'm not including like a larger sample size. Although I guess you could do that with this Miami team and include Leagues Cup from last year and say, well, that's part of the math that we're including. And look, you can't punish Messi and Suarez and Tata and everybody else for the, you know, for the garbage can that was the first half of the season.
Yeah.
We'll see. I just think if you have set the points record and you win MLS Cup against what I would call, you know, on both fronts, the best group of fellow contenders, both in top level quality as well as depth the league has ever seen, I would have a hard time saying if Miami get that job done, if they win the double, if they knock off the Crew, you would think, and then probably LAFC in the final, I would have a hard time saying, given the players that they have, the performances that they put in, regardless of the underlying numbers, that there would be a single season and a team that's better than this. That's what we're playing for, man. That's the stakes for everybody. Just as you said, it's not just Miami, it's Columbus, it's LAFC. It feels bigger to me, like what is attached to MLS Cup, even if it's just a smidgen. And maybe that's just Messi. It might be that just like Messi changes math. It just feels a little bit bigger to me.
I mean, I agree with you. Will, if Columbus win, right? Let's say Columbus go down to Florida and come out with a commanding win and then handle LAFC in the final again. Would you feel the same way about Columbus? Would you say, the best team of all? Okay.
Yeah. I think I would. Wait, and could, the sad thing for Columbus is within that context, you have two final losses.
Yeah.
You have a Campeones Cup final loss and obviously a CONCACAF Champions Cup final loss. And the one in the CONCACAF Champions Cup has to be especially galling given what was expelled.
It was a way to lose.
Yes, correct. Yeah, you went there, but everybody knows what we're talking about. And then on PKs, of course, in Campeones Cup. But if they would do that, there are these little breaks. It could mean that you win four trophies and you do it in every competition and, you know, you lose the shield because of it. But hey, MLS Cup is the ultimate prize. And I still am there. I mean, I think I've said this on this show. I know I've said it on Countdown. All due respect to Sasha. He is a great analyst. He was a great player. I love talking soccer with him. He is crazy if he thinks the Shield is more important than Cup.
Okay.
Is
he right, though, that you can get lucky and win MLS Cup?
I don't think so. I think that's a misnomer.
I think 10 years ago.
Who's the last lucky team? The Rapids? RSL the year before that?
2020 Crew.
Okay, but look, throw that one out. It's a pandemic year. It's a weird season.
Okay.
It's a weird season. That might look, I might give you that one. I might give you that. But there hasn't been a seed below four since that Rapids team in 2010 that have won MLS Cup. And I actually think with this new playoff format that we have, where there are more games and in particular top seeds should be moving on from the first round. Like if you don't look in the mirror, St. Louis.
Yeah.
I think, look, you're going to have to play at least two games there, a semifinal, a final, an MLS Cup. And as you just pointed out with the Crew, and going on a soliloquy about how great they are, these are not regular season, hey, that team, fire them into the sun games. These are best competition, biggest stakes. Everybody knows it's this or go home. It's a different game. And if you can go through five games, to me, that's not luck. It's not. And for Miami's legacy, tradition, whatever word we're choosing here.
Tradition is DC.
For their season.
Tradition is DC.
Legacy. For their legacy, I am of the opinion that Miami have to win MLS Cup for this season to be a true success.
Yep.
Like, congratulations on the Shield. Congratulations on the points record. Congratulations on going to Club World Cup. But if Inter Miami don't win MLS Cup, it will be, yeah, you won that, but it's like, yeah, that was nice. But I mean, think back. It's close to home here. Like, the precedent is David Beckham in the Galaxy. Remember the 09 and 10 seasons. The Galaxy finished first in the West. They lost RSL in the final. The Galaxy won the Shield. They lost in the playoffs. Was that a success? Were people looking at David Beckham and that Galaxy project and saying, this is league changing. You guys have done everything you set out to do. Congrats. No. David Beckham knew. The Galaxy knew. MLS knew. He had to win Cup. And I will never forget the moment he dropped to his knees after winning it. And it was like, that was the payoff. That was the moment they needed. That was the moment we'll all remember. Nobody remembers that Shield team. Not in terms of greatest of all time or box-checked success David Beckham in the Galaxy. It's the MLS Cups. They got to win it. They have to. Anyway, we'll see if they can. Who will win, Doyle? Who will win? And why wouldn't they if they don't? That's kind of leading you, but...
Yeah, I picked Miami at the start of the year. I think Columbus are a better team who play better all-around soccer. I am not stupid enough to pick against a fully fit and engaged Lionel Messi. I think Miami's going to win. If they don't, it's because they're actually just bad defensively. And we saw it against the Revs. Even after they conceded those two pretty soft goals, you know, the handball goal from, was it Bobby Wood? That was,
it was, yes,
as you said, justifiably called back, but it, that came off of just complete disaster from Sergio Busquets. Thomas Avalos is, I mean, he's still a young defender and he makes those kinds of mistakes. I really like David Martinez, but he's not right now. He's not fixing everything. They're just, they are bad defensively in key moments, and we saw that cost them against the Crew in the League's Cup, and we saw that cost them against Monterrey in CONCACAF Champions Cup. And because they have Messi and Suarez and Alba and Diego Gomez and Julian Gressel and everybody else on down the list, they can outscore most teams 4-3. Sometimes they don't. If they lose, it'll be because they just do not have that compactness and that precision with the ball that we see from Columbus. And that precision with the ball is what allows Columbus to control games, even when they're playing.
Now, Doyle, don't the Crew have, despite their defensive record, some similar weaknesses to direct play, to some shaky goalkeeping moments, to set pieces?
It's not to the same degree. It's not to the same degree that Miami have. And
it is the ability to explode and make that hiccup to the same degree as Miami?
I don't think so. No. And you can see
I guess what I'm saying is that just as Miami have flaws, though maybe their flaws are magnified more because in a one game setup, like this happens and has happened to them repeatedly. But I think the Crew have some of the same issues. I think LAFC probably, if we're naming the three teams that could do it, maybe they have some of the same issues at times, especially if they go down early and have to stretch.
I mean, I think so, but to me, Miami are in a whole different tier. And you can see it in the goals allowed. They conceded 49 goals on the season. The Crew conceded 40, despite playing 47 games and really kind of rotating the entire squad down the stretch and coasting into the playoffs, which cost them some goals.
Is that a misnomer? I'm playing devil's advocate. Is that a misnomer because six of them came against Cincinnati in a game that Miami were decimated by injury?
No, I don't think so. I think if you look at, you know, their expected goals against, they're actually 52.9. So they actually gave up fewer goals. God, that's the fourth worst expected goals against in the Eastern Conference. Only Nashville, Montreal, and the Revolution were worse in terms of expected goals allowed. And you look at Columbus, they're at 44.1. It's just a different
Give me the. Did I make the kind of complete case for why the Crew wouldn't win?
No.
What would you add to that case for the why they would not win? Because we understand why they would. We've seen that before.
Set pieces. Like you can.
How about LAFC?
I mean, I think LAFC, what we saw last year in the playoffs is that they become too predictable and they become too reliant on plan A and don't have a plan B that involves them actually commanding the game. And when that happens, as we saw in MLS Cup and as we saw in the League's Cup, and honestly, as we saw a little bit in the US Open Cup final, their level drops and they become disengaged and they end up defending so deep that they are one misplay or one special play from the opposition away from being sent packing. And that was the criticism against Club Leon in CONCACAF Champions Cup 2 years ago, or last year, sorry, it was 2023. It was a criticism against the Crew. Like, they're going to have to beat the best teams. And if you're going to do that, you can't give Inter Miami 70% of the ball in the attacking third. Because if you do that, Lionel Messi is going to skin you alive. And we know Cucho Hernandez is because he's done it twice to them in finals already.
Giroud or Bogush? Number nine.
Oh, Giroud. And Bogush ends up going out onto the wing. You have to trust the guy to do it in the biggest games. And I don't think the attack has been, even though he hasn't been scoring much, like I actually think he's been a value add in attack over the past month here. LAFC are playing good ball. It's not as dimensional as the two Eastern Conference teams that we have waxed poetic about over the past half hour, but they're like, if LAFC went to Columbus or went to Miami and won MLS Cup, I wouldn't be shocked. Like they have the pieces to do it.
Pretty well set up to do it. I mean, look, we thought the transition game would be better for them in MLS Cup last year. It didn't happen, but both the Crew and Miami can be got in behind, especially when they push the numbers forward. Those center backs have played well at times, but like Rudy Camacho is not exactly fleet of foot. And if Moreira gets pushed too far forward, TBD. Anybody else to add to this group before we really preview these wildcard games and get on out of here? Anybody like, yeah, this could really happen. You could really win MLS Cup. And I'm not just sort of like playing to your ego.
I mean, if LAFC trip and the Galaxy get home field throughout the Western Conference playoffs, could they then get into MLS Cup itself and win a shootout? Yeah, there's a way to do that. They just have so much talent. I could see that happening. Cincinnati, like you can make a plausible case if the defense suddenly snaps into place and one of the forwards gets hot, so it's not all Lucho. Or Orlando City, second half of the season, 11-3-3 record, multiple match winners. I think they need to be braver.
No wins against big teams other than at Cincinnati, who haven't performed like a big team in the second half of the season post League's Cup.
It's fair. I do give them credit for that League's Cup draw against the Cruz Azul side that is running away with the Apertura. I think they can hit a really high. I'm not picking them, but I think they can hit a really high level. The Sounders are really good. The Dynamo are really good. Both teams feel like they're a piece away, but both have the ability to control games. And if you can control games in the playoffs and then win on a set piece, we've seen it before.
I trust their defenses. I trust them to keep margins tight. And that's really the starting point for playoff success. All right. Well, the starting point for the playoffs is Tuesday, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. In Montreal, the wild card game, Montreal against Atlanta United, half-hour pregame show, MLS Countdown. It'll be myself and Lloyd Sam with Kaylin Kyle. Love me some Lloyd. He is an absolute trip to have on games and especially in the studio, so that should be fun. Let's just dive into it here. Obviously, it's a revenge game for Joseph Martinez. Do you believe in Montreal, Doyle? Like, when you see this run that they've made and you now push it into the playoffs, are you sitting here thinking, hey, clear favorites, Montreal at home, they've handled business there for the past month and a half. Like, I believe in this project, these players, this group, if not for the whole season, but right now.
I think so, to a degree. I like, you know, we talked about that attacking trio up top. I like that group. Nathan Saliba will be back for this game. He missed decision day.
Huge.
Yeah, and he's one of my favorite young players in the league. Sampiet continues to be underrated. The defense leaves me wanting more. They're still trying to figure out the wingbacks, though. I will say it looks like something fun for 2025. I think they're favorites in this game. I think if they win this game, they then lose in two to Miami. And there's no shame in that. But it's like there's proof of concept now, both in terms of a little bit of quality and youth. And that's what we were all looking for from this year. And hopefully getting layered onto it in 2025 will be some of that ball dominant back to front play that Laurent Courtois showed when he was with the Crew, but this team really hasn't showed much in 2024. Do you believe in them?
No.
Okay.
No, I believe they're fun.
Your answer is better than mine.
No, I believe that they're fun and I've really enjoyed this, but I don't believe in them anything past like good job sneaking into the 8 or 9 seed. Hey, Montreal as a club, you have massive work to do and don't let this little success let you forget or get out and ahead of your skis on that. I mean, they don't have a CSO. Corey Ray is a consultant. They had a 24-game stretch with four wins before the schedule got just absolutely pillowy. So, like, this is a wonderful moment for them, and it's what you could dream of this project in this moment right now, which is just to have a home game. Just to get a home game, and if they win two home games in the playoffs, to show your fans you're making progress. But to me, to believe in Montreal, I would need to see something in the offseason and certainly more investment as far as the top-level players go. Now, we know Atlanta will make that investment, and didn't seem like they would get into the playoffs otherwise. You got to credit them for that Red Bulls win in particular the day before decision day, just to set up
decision day. Credit them for beating a team that's won one game in 3 months.
No, just because it was dramatic, man. Woo. Just because they could have given up. Like, you know, a lot of teams in this position give up, right?
That's fair.
Like, a lot of teams do, and they didn't. And so shout out to Rob Valentino. He was noticeably emotional after the decision day win to get them here. How would they beat Montreal? Like, what is the formula for this Atlanta team right now?
I think Montreal or Atlanta have better talent. So I think try to put the game on the feet of guys in central midfield and that attack. Alexei Marinchuk hasn't been great, but he's a high-level player, and Sava Lobjanidze has shown that he's a high-level player as well, and just allow the talent to be the difference. And that means coming out and getting on the ball. Don't be cagey. Don't let it turn into something where the crowd can get into it and elevate the home team. You know, this is one of those fortune favors the bold type of moments.
Remember, these two teams played on October 2nd. Joseph Martinez had two goals. Montreal won in Atlanta, 2-1. On that day, possession was basically bang even. Atlanta had way more chance creation than Montreal, but Montreal were way more efficient. And it feels to me, Doyle, like we're looking at a very similar box score, so to speak. Now, I don't know where the goals will end up, but I think it's likely that possession will be roughly even. Atlanta will have more shots, more opportunities, more shots on goal. Montreal will probably have the better opportunities, but not as many. And then it comes down to finishing.
Yeah. Atlanta can't let this game be decided in their own box, right? They cannot invite Joseph and Caden Clark into the 18 for multiple looks. I think they just have to control the game here. Put their foot on the ball, make Montreal chase, decide the game literally anywhere else on the field. Because with the way Joseph's scoring now, and we know he's going to be up for this one, there's only one outcome if Atlanta sit in.
Can I ask you this? How much credit should Rob Valentino get for this job that he's done?
I mean, it hasn't been an easy job, and getting them, as you pointed out, a lot of teams in this situation quit, and getting them to fight to the very end and pick up these 6 points out of nowhere and get over the line and get into the wild card game, it's a tip of the cap. And I think that, you know, the emotion that he showed was well earned.
Is he going to get the job?
No, he's not going to get the job.
But could he be a big part of the club going forward if that's what he wants as an assistant? Absolutely. He's already proven that. Could he be a guy that, like, a San Jose looks at? There are some open jobs around the league.
I don't know.
We'll find out.
Yep.
We'll find out. I remember last year, Troy Lesane drove the Red Bulls all the way to the playoffs, dragged them from last, got the job in D.C., Maybe Rob Valentino is the next one here. Which team would give Miami a tougher time? Like, if you're Miami watching, who do you want to win?
I think I would want Montreal to win. I just think, I don't want to read too much into it, but Atlanta have given Miami a little bit of trouble this year. And as scary as it would be to face a motivated Joseph in the playoffs, The talent differential between the two teams is really, really stark. I don't think it's quite as stark against Atlanta.
I look forward to either team, whoever goes through that second game in the best of three series. If it's in Montreal, those fans are sick. When Montreal are winning and they have big home games, they
I will say,
and a packed bins with Messi.
Yeah,
these are some really fun environments.
Here's the thing. The pack bends with Messi. There'll be a lot of pink shirts in that stadium. In Montreal, it'll be blue. Like, those Montreal fans will be rooting for CF Montreal. And that's not insignificant.
It's not. It's not. Western Conference do their wild card game on Wednesday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern. Again, a half hour pregame on MLS Countdown. A lot of green showing up at quote unquote home for the Whitecaps, because of course the Whitecaps can't host the game. So as the 8 seed, they go to Providence Park and the Timbers. I think that very clearly changes who the favorite is, Doyle. If they were playing in Vancouver, I would say Whitecaps, you're the favorite. Maybe you can get your second playoff win of all time. Now that it's at Providence Park, given the form of Vancouver, no wins in 7, I think the Timbers are the favorites. And while Phil Neville has to be happy about playing at home, I don't know if favorite tag is what you would want if you're the Portland Timbers, given the way that I think you'd rather be a little more under the radar than that. Less pressure, so to speak.
I guess, but I don't think it matters much either way. I think Portland should have and would have come into this game expecting and expected to win, whether it was in Vancouver or at home. It comes down to talent. Portland have the better players. As much as I like, you know, Ryan Gauld, Brian White, Fafa Picot, I would take Portland's attack over that. And with
For sure.
With the way Vancouver are playing, would it shock you if Portland scored 4 goals? Whether they want the motivation of being underdog or not, I would, like, 4 goals is fully on the table for the Timbers in this game.
Yeah, like, forget the tag. You take the home game, no doubt about it, especially given the Timbers' form home and away. I'm so disappointed in the Vancouver Whitecaps overall, and it has nothing to do with where this game is being played. It has everything to do with having an opportunity to change the narrative around themselves as a team, as a squad, as a club, and just falling so epically flat on their face trying to do it. I know that the schedule was packed up. I know they had Canadian Championship that distracted them. I know there were some injuries to big-time players. Gauld was gone for the international game. Brian White was hurt. But no wins in their last 7, Doyle. It just feels like the most Whitecaps thing of all time. And I'm just, not only that, but the summer was the most Whitecaps thing of all time. For Stuart Armstrong to be the big DP signing and then have Stuart Armstrong not really get into the team to affect them down the stretch.
Yeah,
how do they win this? How do they turn the tide of that narrative that around this time of the year just seems to build like a wave?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question. They feel like prohibitive underdogs. I guess the answer would be that Portland are just as bad defensively as Vancouver are, and Brian White and Ryan Gauld and Fafa Picot to a lesser extent find a way. They find a way to punish teams. Now, does that include with Stuart Armstrong on the field? Does that mean Pedro Vite is in a more attack? I don't know. Like, I literally don't know what formation the Caps are going to play in this one, which makes it all so weird and so hard to have any level of faith that they can actually get it done.
I think you have to score goals because, you know, Portland are gonna, and that has been the weakness of this Caps team. I go back to the start of September. 1 goal scored, 0 goals scored, 2 goals scored, 1 goal scored, 2 goals scored, 1 goal scored, 0 goals scored, 0 goals scored, 1 goal scored, 1 goal scored. Like, multiple goals has not been in this team's DNA, really. Vanni Sartini's got to find a way to get it in there. What's your predictions? Tuesday and Wednesday, who you got?
I have the home teams winning. And by home team in the Western Conference, I mean Portland.
I will echo you. I believe home teams will get it done. We saw that trend last year in the playoffs. 20 of 28 games, 20 times the home teams won, 7 of 8 in the first round. Of course, home team won MLS Cup. It matters, man. It really matters this time of year.
Let me ask you this. If the Whitecaps lose, is Vanni Sartini's job at risk? And should it be?
It might be. I don't think it should be. Given the history of the club, given, I think, what you just have to call out as lack of investment in top level players, I don't think it's particularly reasonable for Whitecaps front office or ownership to say something better than 6th through 8th is the expectation. And that's right where Vanny's had him. He's been pretty consistent in that way. They've won titles in Canada and the Canadian Championship, which, I mean, look, it's a smaller competition, but it's not smaller in the hearts and minds of Canadian soccer fans. And it gets you into the Champions League. I think there has to be something that changes in the way that they approach how they build the squad if they want to consistently get better results. I do think, however, that Vanny's tendency to shuffle the deck in terms of formation and approach, and also his tendency to just kind of lose his head a little bit in big moments. I mean, suspensions have been a pretty consistent thing for him, and it was on decision day as well. I think those are things that you might have to say, hey, look, keep it a little bit more stable, man. We love your passion, but we need you on the sideline for the biggest games of the year.
I think I agree with all of that. And if you look at it, big spend on Stuart Armstrong, who has barely factored in. Big spend, relatively speaking, 2-year guaranteed deal for Demir Krylock, who was brought in ahead of this year and has been, you know, I think he's broken, right? He just can't do the job anymore. Big spend on Samuel Adekugbe, who's played fewer than 1,000 minutes this year. There seems to be a disconnect between what Vanny wants and what the front office gets him. And then on top of that, the other thing that I find concerning is that they have not done a good job of developing players from within. They've done a good job of getting guys like Brian White and Tristan Blackman.
Fafa,
guys from elsewhere in MLS, but they have not been able to develop players from that academy. And that is something that I think should be central to their identity as an MLS team. Look, we're getting into postmortem stuff before they've officially lost. We'll touch on this more in coming weeks.
Hey, that's what happens when you're a postseason team. You know, your lifespan could be very short. So that's kind of the way it goes. All right, before we get out of here, let's just quickly look ahead to the other round one matchups. And a reminder that David Goss will be with us on Thursday to really dig in and preview all of these.
Who?
So we have who? Yeah, what? Columbus, Red Bulls, Cincinnati, New York City, Orlando, Charlotte are the three in the East. And then in the West, it's LA Galaxy, Colorado Rapids, RSL, Minnesota, Seattle, Houston. What's the matchup you're looking forward to the most?
Crew versus Red Bulls, just because I love watching the Crew so much. They could be playing anybody in the world, and I would say that's the one I'm looking forward to most.
I'll take Seattle-Houston. I just think it's so evenly matched.
But do you think that will lead to
good
soccer?
The most thrilling?
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I don't think it's going to be the most thrilling. I also am very curious to see how two teams respond to different sort of gut punches, one being the Galaxy. Obviously, on decision day, like losing this thing that had felt sort of within their grasp, the number one seed and home field advantage, and then the Rapids, who are just decimated by injury. Like, I don't know what Georgie's going to end up being, but it doesn't look good for him.
That was ugly.
Right now, Cole Bassett's still been out. Sam Vines has been out. Cabral has been out, though he's now coming back off the bench. Stefan missed this last game. I mean, the timing for the Rapids is all wrong. So I just want to see which of those two teams show up. How about an upset? Give me an upset pick. You don't got to explain it too much because we'll do that with Dave, but just an early gut reaction.
Minnesota over RSL. And RSL have shown some X-Dog down the stretch here. I don't think they've lost since like mid-September. I don't think they're playing particularly well despite that. Minnesota are playing really well, and they seem to have a couple of match winners. I just feel it for the Loons.
I'm going to take Charlotte over Orlando. I know it's razor margins because it's a 4-5 game. Charlotte, 4 wins, 1 draw in their last 5.
You are just not buying Orlando's second half of the season form.
I am buying it. This is not the same kind of opponent that they've been playing against. And I think ultimately what Charlotte are good at, which is being really, really smart about getting into their defensive shape the moment there is a potential for danger. And then now with these designated players and Pat Agyeman playing at their best, being able to break, those are things that, especially if you ask Orlando to play twice at home, they don't generally do that well. Like, they don't break down a tight block all that well, even with Ojeda in there. They haven't beat a great team. This one's a toss-up for me, but if I'm just picking upset specials, like, I think you've got to give Charlotte a good chance of winning it.
Can I give you a Pat Agyeman stat?
Hell yeah.
Pat Agyeman, for his career, averages 2 goals per 90 in the MLS Cup playoffs. Do you think he'll keep that up during the
Double
the
it,
first
maybe.
Round?
I mean, look, Messi's got to chase him. That's what we know, right? Like, look, Lionel, the standard has been set. Go chase Big Pat. The Hive is watching.
Pat Agyeman for MVP? Are you ready to cast your vote, Weeby?
Not Pat Agyeman for MVP. It can't be ruled out. That's certainly true. Anyway, we're making our picks. We're getting our bracket in. You got to do it by Friday. Bracket.mlssoccer.com. Cash prizes as well as EAFC 25. Should be really fun. And remember, I mean, if I just got to remind you, I don't know how you would get to like 115 minutes of extra time today or any other day and not be a subscriber to MLS Season Pass. That just like breaks my brain. But if you are not, or if you're having trouble, you've been stealing somebody else's, you're having trouble getting on, you're, any sort of connectivity issues you have, it's $9.99 for the entire playoffs. So go sign up for that. Tuesday, Montreal, Atlanta, 7:30 p.m. Eastern time. Wednesday, Vancouver, Portland, 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. The wild card games as the 2024 Audi MLS Cup playoffs begin. 30-minute pregames, wrap up afterwards, all on MLS Season Pass. And we'll be back
playoff
on Thursday
Weeby.
With David Goss.
Playoff Weeby. We're getting the best.
I'm dishing. Let's go. All right, we're going to get out of here. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody. Adios. Enjoy the games. We'll be right back.